Hello, I'm Kelly Bush, and this is number 0258, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. And it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0258. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, we have another visit from NASA expert Rod Pyle, who's back on the program to talk about the 45th anniversary of man going to the moon and looks at its legacy.
There's reasonable evidence to suggest that had we kept building the Apollo hardware we had in the 70s, we would have ended up saving a lot of money. And the shuttle was intended to be a cheaper, more reliable access to space, so it didn't turn out to be, but that was the idea. So I wish we had finished the shuttle program with something else in place to continue the adventure. Unfortunately, we've got this gap where we're buying rides from the Russians and the very hardware they built to compete with Apollo back in the 60s. And we're waiting for our rocket, the Space Launch System, and the Orion capsule to be finished.
Dr. James Hubbard, the survival doctor, on his new book, Duct Tape 911.
You know, I looked at some of the books that are out there, several out on duct tape, but I didn't see any that showed the medical ways you could use duct tape. And there are a lot of them out there.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit and the burning question of, why is everyone still single?
There are a segment of people, a category of people, who are happy being single. And I think a lot of them get a lot of flack for being single. And one of the things that I teach is, if someone knows themselves enough that they're staying out of relationships and they're choosing to be single, they're not complaining about it, they're actually happy about it, that's the best choice for them, and we need to respect that choice.
Plus, there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0258, was yoga teacher Kelly Bush, who teaches at the Nasara Retreat, which is in Costa Rica. And you'll find the link to the retreat on this week's What's On page at thestufffile.com. And thank you very much, Kelly, for doing the guest Slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Michael Shasky took what he allegedly claimed was a $20,000 winning lottery ticket to a convenience store in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. He was turned away and went to another store where he was denied again payment for this ticket. You would think that he'd take a hint, wouldn't you? Said Rollo Redburn of the Oklahoma Lottery Commission. Now, according to Redburn, the ticket was cut and pasted together from two different cards. When the stores wouldn't pay him, Shasky took the ticket to the Lottery Commission office. They called the police, and Shasky was arrested. Basically, with the number of times he tried to pass the ticket, it seemed he was doing everything he could to get himself arrested, said Oklahoma City Police Master Sergeant Gary Knight. Wow. You know, I say this with all the sarcasm I can muster. Michael Shasky is a real winner. Yeah. Okay, here's another idiotic story of zero tolerance in schools, which has gone mad. And believe me, nothing burns my butt more besides a flame that's about 3 feet high than these stories. We start off with a quote. My son is not a sexualized minor. That's what Erica Martinez said. He signed a document that says he committed sexual misconduct, but she says he signed because administrators at Ashton Ranch Elementary School in Surprise, Arizona, told him to. He did pull his pants down, but she says he did it because another student told him to and threatened to do it if he didn't do it himself. You see, her son is 5 years old. The Dysart Unified School District defends the sexual misconduct label, which has been placed in the boy's permanent file. Our school district uses consistent language for disciplinary infractions in order to provide clarity and track discipline data accurately. That's what the assistant superintendent Jim Dean said. Have you ever heard such bull? I mean, really. Anyway, Martinez can add a rebuttal to the file, but the label will follow her son until he leaves the Dysart schools. Well, perhaps his mother should do the smart thing and have him leave the Dysart school right now. First of all, who makes a 5-year-old sign anything? Who are these pinheads at this school? I honestly can't believe the blatant stupidity of people who are mandated to educate our children. I'm sure Erica has a few documents she'd like them to sign. They're called lawsuits. Yes. Let's just move along, shall we? Police in Minota, North Dakota say that Robert Allen Poular, age 30, was driving in town when he managed to fall out of his car and run himself over. Amazingly, he was able to get up, chase down his car, get back in, and continue driving. Police tracked him down and got him the medical care that he obviously needed, and then arrested him for DUI, driving with a suspended license, because they always have a suspended license in these stories, and refusal to submit to a chemical test. That brings an entire new meaning to the term hit and run, doesn't it? It's not very often someone is the victim and perpetrator of a hit and run, but there you go. The African hippopotamus is not found in South America, except for the estimated 50-some that, confusingly to natives, roam the Colombian countryside between Bogota and Medellin. The animals are the progeny of the 4 smuggled in 30 years ago by cocaine kingpin Pablo Escobar, who generously established a grand exotic zoo for his neighbors' enjoyment after his drug business took off and before he was gunned down back in 1993. However, as BBC News reported in June, hippo meat is inedible, and without their African natural enemies, they breed with astonishing prolificness, thus creating a time bomb for Colombia. Yeah, you know, this could be the topic of another apocalyptic Michael Bay movie in about 10 years or so. Anyway, we have one more item in this section of Stuff File News before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. 46-year-old Kimberly Williams was convicted in April in Will County, Illinois, of beating dominatrix Teresa Washington. Well, there's a turn of events, isn't it? Yeah, she beat Teresa with a baseball bat. Now, Williams conceded to the judge that she had hired Washington, but only because she wanted a slave to take pictures of her naked while she did housework. Instead, she said, Washington became aggressive, declared herself a master, and dragged Williams around by her hair. Furthermore, according to Williams, Washington's transformation happened abruptly after a phone call Washington made to someone that she met on the dating website Christian Mingle. Wait, what? Seriously? Yeah, okay. So I'm guessing that from now on, you'll think differently about the people who sign up for Christian Mingle when you watch their television commercials in the future. Because, yeah, that's kind of twisted all the way around. Anyway, let's get to our next guest, shall we? This past week marked the 45th anniversary of man landing on the moon when Apollo 11 traveled to the lunar surface. NASA expert Rod Pyle is back on the program to talk with us about the historic moment and its legacy. He joins us once again from California via Skype-to-Skype communication. Hi, Rod.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us once again.
My pleasure.
I know it's an odd number year. It's 45. It's not 50. But are you mildly dismayed at the lack of attention this story got?
Not mildly. You know, it actually got some press, which is good. The 50th anniversary will get a lot more press. What doesn't get discussed enough, I think, is what we're doing to follow up those achievements, or the lack of that follow-up. And I wish there was a little more of a story around that, at least in the popular press.
We've now put to rest the shuttle program. So what should we have been doing since man landed on the moon 45 years ago?
Well, this is not a popular construct particularly, but I think there's reasonable evidence to suggest that had we kept building the Apollo hardware we had in the 70s, we would have ended up saving a lot of money, probably having a greater adventure than we did with the shuttle, but that's not what we did. And the shuttle was intended to be a cheaper, more reliable access to space, so it didn't turn out to be, but that was the idea. So I wish we had finished the shuttle program with something else in place to continue the adventure. unfortunately, we've got this this gap, you know, where we're buying rides from the Russians and the very hardware they built to compete with Apollo back in the 60s. And we're waiting for our rocket, the Space Launch System, and the Orion capsule to be finished. And it's kind of a race between whether it'll be, at least for orbital stuff, whether it'll be that or SpaceX with Elon Musk. And we're kind of waiting to see. But I wish they'd filled that gap with something, preferably that would go beyond Earth orbit into deep space adventure again.
Is it not the Chinese now who are talking about going to the moon?
Yes, they are. And, you know, all they have to do is decide, and they've got 10 years of funding. That's an average. But, you know, we have changes in the administration every 4 to 8 years. We have changes in Congress, the Senate, every couple of years. And every time that happens, priorities shift. And right now we have the Democrats, the Republicans fighting over, should we go to the moon? Should we go get an asteroid? Should we go to Mars? What should we do? Maybe we should just forget the whole thing. And as long as that's going on, it's very difficult to get anything done. And it's kind of the tyranny of democracy. You know, it's a wonderful system, but it makes it tough for things like the space program because they can't get long-term funding and a concrete direction to go. Whereas in China, with their system, they just decide and there's a little bit of discussion and that's what they're going to do. So I have no doubt that they will.
Even if the Chinese do go to the moon, is it still a step backwards? I mean, what are they going to do differently than the 12 guys who are already there?
Well, I think from what I've seen of their program, they haven't talked about it a lot. And by the way, the Russians are talking about that again as well. I think the idea is to go and have a more profound presence. We visited and came back, the so-called flags and footprints idea of go land, stay for a while, and then come home with your rocks and your experiments complete. The idea with more modern mission designs is to go and land some kind of a larger spacecraft that could provide a base, if you will, and perhaps even construct something on the surface where people can stay. There's a lot of problems with that. It's easier to do than it was 45 years ago because we now have better life understanding of life support and so forth. We also understand that the radiation out in space is really dangerous, so you've either got to bury this under a certain amount of soil, do some kind of shielding to prevent the astronauts from getting cooked every time there's a solar flare. So it's a little more complicated than it looks, but I think that's the general mission design. They would go to stay a longer term.
There's also talk, of course, of going to Mars, and as a matter of fact, I believe that's one of the things that's the topic of your most recent book, correct?
Well, my most recent book is about Curiosity, so it's about the unmanned mission to Mars. Yeah. There's a little discussion of the idea of crewed missions in the future. The problem is, you know, that's always been an idea that's kind of 30 years away ever since the 1950s. We'll do it 30 years, we'll do it 30 years. It still feels like it's 30 years away. There's a lot to overcome. You know, you're in space for 7 to 9 months each direction, so you've got bone loss and radiation issues and all this kind of stuff, including life support. Then you're on the surface, then you've got to come back, and at this point we don't really have the technological designs. We could if we put the money and the backbone into it, but at this point we don't have the technology to do that round trip. There has been some talk by some private organizations, and there have been some mission studies about one-way trips where you just go and you stay, and that requires a lot less mass to do. But it's hard to support people on that planet because it's a fairly hostile environment, so I don't think anybody's taken that very seriously yet.
Well, the reason why I brought it up is because I was wondering, there had been talk, albeit briefly, of using the moon as a jumping-off point towards Mars.
Yeah, and there still is. You know, there's a lot of people, both within NASA, although their voices are not very loud at the moment, but also in Congress saying, look, you know, let's go to the moon, land there, build a base, learn about operating in low gravity, not weightless, but low gravity environments, learn about growing food in these hydroponic tanks and so forth, and really figure out what it takes to do while we're a few days away from home instead of the better part of a year away from home. So there's a lot of logic to that. Whether it'll be us or the Chinese or the Russians or a combination of nations, it's hard to say. It would be nice if it could be an international mission, but we've seen what's been happening with the space station, and that's not always the easiest thing to pull off.
You have been a NASA expert for quite a while. You know what's going on there. It's been 45 years since man first went to the moon, and there were several, of course, missions after, 12 in total, as I said, 12 men in total have gone up there. But having known what you know, when the Apollo mission was scrubbed and we went on with the space shuttle, did you ever think this far ahead we would not have gone back to the moon?
I don't think I could believe that at the time. You know, a lot of people were from that generation sort of stunned. There was a film made called Orphans of Apollo, a documentary about that whole phenomenon of what happened, where's my flying car, why don't we have cities on the moon, all that kind of thing. And it just seemed impossible that we would abandon that for very long at the time. Now, as you probably know, they had built enough spacecraft to do missions 18, 19, and 20. One of those got used for Skylab. The other ones are sitting in museums as the most expensive exhibits ever known. But it's interesting. It wasn't, people blame Nixon for, he canceled Apollo. Well, there was a lot of discussion. Even some of the senior people within NASA said, we're operating right at the edge of our technological capability. We had a close brush with Apollo 13. Something's going to go wrong. Let's pull in for a few years and sort of reassess what we're doing. Unfortunately, that lasted 30 years with the shuttle. So the answer to your question is no, I don't think at the time I imagined that it could take this long. And I'm still sort of stunned at how hard it seems to be to do it. I mean, the budget is much smaller. It's a tenth of what it was at Apollo's peak. But even so, when you see what Elon Musk has pulled off in less than a decade, you kind of want to turn to NASA and say, is it really as hard as it looks? But there's a much bigger emphasis on safety and that kind of thing now. So it's a whole different mission than it was. Apollo was very risky in its way.
Do you think our wanderlust has gone? The reason why I bring it up, I think of my grandmother who passed away in the 80s. And she lived through so many technological marvels. And you think of, for instance, Walter Cronkite when he just simply said, oh boy, when they landed. Just the excitement. Whereas our generation, at least my generation, grew up with things like Star Trek, and it's like, yeah, okay, big deal. In other words, there's not the excitement behind the possibility of doing what is considered impossible, because the current generation thinks it's inevitable, and if they think it's inevitable, somebody else will do it.
It's such a big question, There's a huge percentage of the American population that doesn't know we have a space station or think it crashed because they're thinking of Skylab or the shuttle. There's the 38% of Americans that think aliens walk among us as we speak. So we've got all these different mindsets and ideas and constructs about what space is. But yes, I think you're right. There's this sort of loss of that spirit of adventure. And I think some of that's media. Media is so ubiquitous now, and it comes in so many channels. The fidelity is high. It's extremely involving. And we're not restricted to what we had when I grew up, which was three major networks and a couple of independent ones, and radio, So what they chose to show us was it. So they couldn't tell us what to think, but they could tell us what to think about. Now there's this huge media universe. There's much more entertainment. And I personally think that that is largely responsible for the loss of drive and interest in this big mission. There's another thing, which is NASA made it look pretty easy. They made the shuttle look easy until it started having problems and we lost a couple of crews. And I think people began to sort of pull back from the idea of, okay, this is a great adventure, and replace that with, this isn't something we really need to do anymore. And I don't mean to sound cynical, but gosh, aren't the Kardashians fascinating? So, it's such a big question. It's hard to answer. And I wish I knew, because if I knew, I'd call NASA and tell them.
Well, as you say, and one last quick question. As you say, the Chinese are going to the moon. The Russians probably want to go to the moon. There's always been that, when it comes to Mars, 30 years. What about the United States and going back to the moon? When do you think they will go back, if they go back?
It's mud wrestling right now. There are those within Congress who say, look, we don't want to do this asteroid thing. Let's go to the moon. We're building a great big rocket. It's moon capable easily. So let's go. We just need to build a lander. Then there's the other voices which are currently running the show, which are saying, no, we're going to do the asteroid redirect. They talked at one point about going to an asteroid where it is. Now they're going to bring a smaller one back to lunar orbit and visit it there. That's still very complicated and exciting and difficult to do, but it's a run-out and run-back kind of mission, and it's going to be a dinky asteroid, so it kind of presents a difficult media image. A couple of astronauts floating near something the size of a really large beach ball is not as exciting as going to a planetoid or going to the moon. So it could be 10 years, it could be 30 years.
Rod, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Your latest book is full title, Curiosity.
Curiosity, the inside story of the Mars rover and the people who made it happen.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rod. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
NASA expert Rod Pyle. He's also the author of Curiosity, an inside look at the Mars rover mission and the people who made it happen. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0258, and you'll find the links to Rod's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. In the interest of time, kindly hold your applause until the entire program is over.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk to Dr. James Hubbard, the survival doctor. He's got a new book out called Duct Tape 911. And Frank Kermit, the relationship coach, is back on the show as well, talking about, or asking anyway, the burning question, why is everyone still single? Stick around for that. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day, and of course, more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Okay, now, several years ago, we told you about David Truscott from Britain. In fact, it was back in 2011. Now, let me refresh your memory. He was being jailed again as a serial trespasser with an unquenchable desire to sneak onto farms and pleasure himself while rolling around nude in manure pits. How does this even get started? I don't know. He especially enjoyed doing this on the farm of Clive Roth near Redruth, England. Now, Truscott apparently emerged from prison unrepentant and was back in trouble in May with another manure pit incident, but this time accompanied by threats to harm Roth and his family and to burn down his farm buildings. Now, during the most recent incarnation, Truscott had received mental health treatment that allowed him to actually act out in a manure pit, and officials believe he took a turn for the worse when that treatment was curtailed. You figure? Well, I mean, I hate to be harsh, but there are some people who just shouldn't be out among us. I think David is definitely one of them. Okay, the Japanese snack company Calbee recently staged a promotion around a popular singer, Nana Mizuki, giving away 10 backstage passes to her August 3rd concert in Yokohama to the purchasers of 10 lucky bags of secretly marked potato chips. Her perhaps hugest fan, 25-year-old Kazuki Fukumoto, was so determined to win that by the time he was arrested for littering in May, he had bought and dumped 89 cartons of potato chip packages weighing over 400 pounds that were found at 6 locations around the cities of Kobe and Akashi. Now, police estimate he had spent the equivalent of about $3,000. I'm guessing that this is a guy that Nana probably wouldn't want backstage with her or anywhere near her at any time, ever. Ever. In June, as 85-year-old Elizabeth Neufeld was backing her car out of her driveway in Bel Air, California, it tipped on a curve and then rolled onto its side. Elizabeth was not hurt, but she was trapped inside while her husband Benjamin, who was 87, got out on his own. As they awaited firefighters, she reportedly handed a cell phone to a passerby so that the Neufelds would have a selfie, which of course made the internet, with Elizabeth having righted herself in the driver's seat, even though the vehicle was sideways on its side, and Benjamin was standing sheepishly alongside the vehicle in this picture. The retired Dr. Elizabeth Neufeld is one of the world's most prominent genetic researchers, by the way, having won numerous awards during stints at the National Institutes of Health, University of California, Berkeley, and also UCLA. So basically, it's official now, folks. The world has gone selfie crazy, and apparently there is no known cure. 25-year-old Jacob Close was wanted after jumping bail in New York on a drug charge, but he recently showed up on the Bloomsburg, Pennsylvania University Police's radar screen after he was rumored to be in the area and was arrested by the campus cops in June. Close's name and photograph had appeared in the Bloomberg Press Enterprise's Your Opinion feature. He apparently could not resist when a street reporter asked him the newspaper's question of the week, whether the Washington Redskins football team should choose another nickname or not. His vitally important opinion? No. Anyway, so now he's back in jail. But I'm sure he's happy, at least for now, that the Redskins will still have their name. I really wanted to make him the idiot of the day, by the way, but we have better candidates for that, so that's coming up a little later on. And the District of Columbia government services have always been a source of bizarre stories for the Stuff File program, and while not as frequent as in the past, it can occasionally still make the cut. Case in point, Rose Preston called 911 on March 15th, fearing a stroke because of a left side numbness, and a crew arrived promptly and administered oxygen. However, the two crew members began bickering while Preston was in the ambulance, waiting to get going. Finally, she became so frustrated that she got out, walked to a metro station, and took the train to the VA hospital. Hey, you know, if you want things done right, sometimes you just have to do them yourself. Let's just hope that those two first responder clowns have been reprimanded in some way, shape, or form. One can only hope. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 32-year-old Bill Hillman, an expert on Spain's bull running events and author of a chapter in How to Survive the Bulls of Pamplona, was hospitalized in July after being gored during the run, with the horn passing through one thigh, missing his femoral artery by a centimeter. He told the Chicago Tribune from the hospital bed that he would be back for the next one. Yeah. Well, he is still considered an expert, or is he now just a bull expert? That's what I want to know. Anyway, this is the kind of guy who needs a doctor in an emergency, and funny we should say that because our next guest just happens to be one. We've had Dr. James Hubbard, a.k.a. the Survival Doctor, on the show several times. Well, he has a new book out called Duct Tape 911. It's the ultimate duct tape survival guide. And James joins us on the line from Colorado. Hi, James.
Hi. Nice to be here.
Nice to have you back on the show. So in the past, I've had the opportunity to talk to the duct tape guys who are rather famous. But first aid was never one of the things that came up when we talked about duct tape. But now you've come up with an entire duct tape 911 book?
Yeah, I mean, I looked at some of the books that are out there, several out on duct tape, but I didn't see any that showed the medical ways you could use duct tape, and there are a lot of them out there.
Okay, so what are some of the medical ways one can use duct tape? And one of the things I'm I mean, they always say you got to rip a Band-Aid off really fast. I hate to think of ripping duct tape off a human body.
That's one of the main concerns I hear, and you know, that's possible. And all these things. I mean, you use duct tape if you don't have something else available. I love to use home items if you don't have the whatever is the particular type of medical supply. So everything, this is kind of, you know, if you don't have those. And a lot of the things that I put in there, or you don't really use the sticky side of the duct tape. Some you do, some you don't. Now, the other thing is some people are allergic to latex and don't use that. As far as the stickiness, the one thing that really started me thinking about duct tape and the medical supplies was using it for wounds. Again, if you can't get to the doctor, you stop the bleeding, you clean the wound really, really well. Those two things are really important. The closing would come after that. And then, we doctors use little strips of tape all the time to repair little cuts on the face or things. So, you know, you don't have to have sutures. If the doctor is unavailable, you can just get a little three-inch long, fourth of an inch wide pieces of duct tape and take that thing together. Now, you'll keep it on there for a good while, a week to 10 days or so, like you would any other wound. And then when you do take it off, you do just like I do when I take Steri-Strips or something off the medical strips. You take them off slowly. You take them off so that they're not really pulling on the wound, so you'll pull it open. You kind of crosswise or something, take them off. And you can do that and be really careful, and you'll be okay with opening the wound up. Now, you're going to get a little hair, and it's going to be a little uncomfortable in those situations. I can't get away from that. One of the things, though, about duct tape, you may not have a lot of cactus in your area, but we do here. And, you know, you pick out, if you fall into a cactus and that happens, there are all sorts of those little spines that'll get into you. Some are pretty big. A lot of them are really small and hard to get to. You can get a piece of duct tape, strip it across there, and you'll pull out most of those spines. Do it several times. Yeah, it's going to hurt, but it's going to hurt worse to keep those little spines in your back or leg or wherever it is.
I never would have thought of that one. Again, I feel sorry for the hirsute guy who has to use a suture to close with duct tape because that, you know, there's no way around that. Like you say, hair is coming off. That's a sad thing.
Oh yeah, it will.
But you can even understand.
There's no way around it.
I understand you could even make things like wrist splints or slings.
Yeah, I mean, if you can make a wrist splint, they're to stabilize a joint or a bone, and they either, you kind of know how much you want to make it conform versus how stiff it is. Sometimes if the splint is really, really stiff, it's hard to exactly conform. So duct tape, you can mold it to whatever you want. You don't have to use the sticky side. You can tape several strips, you know, maybe 10, 12, 15 strips together and make you a little splint out of it. You can do that for wrist, for knees, for ankles. You can do it for fingers and thumbs. And then a sling. One of the easy ways to make a sling if you don't have anything is to get your front of your shirt tail and wrap it around your arm and use a safety pin and keep it that way. If you don't have a safety pin, you can use duct tape. If for some reason you don't want to do that with the shirt, you can just get a strip of duct tape. Again, put the sticky sides to put two strips together, put it around your neck, loop it, and you've got a sling. If you want more of a stable sling, you can make that two or three duct tape wide, duct tape instead of just a few inches. You can make it wider by using more duct tape. You can take off a ring of a swollen finger with duct tape.
How do you do that?
A lot of people.
How do you do that?
In the office, I've had to take a lot of rings off to just cut them off, and a lot of people don't just hate that. And some people will keep the ring on, and, you know, for whatever reason, their fingers have swollen, and they cannot get it off. Well, I've had more people thank me for this tip than anything else. And you can use duct tape, you can use dental floss, but in the duct tape, you get a little strip, maybe again about a fourth of an inch wide. You double it up on its sticky side so that there's no stickiness left. So you've got a little ribbon of duct tape, maybe 2 or 3 feet long. You put it under the ring, a little bit under the ring, so that one end sticks out the other side, and then the rest of it you wrap towards the end of your finger. As you wrap it that way, it displaces the fluid and the swelling and makes the finger smaller, and there's a little technique you can use this in the book that you just can gradually get that ring off a lot of times where you couldn't get it off otherwise.
Wow. Now, have you actually spoken with the folks at Duct Tape in putting this book together?
I would love to get with those people. I've tried several times to talk to them, and actually I would love, you know, I think it would be a great addition and to show people and value for them. But no, I haven't really directly talked to any of them other than to try to say, well, how can we get together on this? I've also have it in some, around here locally, I have it in some Ace Hardware stores and some other stores right next to the duct tape. I have that also in my hometown. So I think that's a good way to get it out. And you can also buy it online at my website, thesurvivaldoctor.com, or you can get it on Amazon. It's Duct Tape 911, the many amazing medical things you can do to tape yourself together.
Now, one of the things I also understand you can do is you can make eyeglasses. Now, how does this work?
Yeah, this one, like the ring, is kind of a magic thing if you don't already know how to do that. Doctors for a long time have known that if you put a pinhole in something, like, you know, whatever that's thin and that you can't otherwise see through, that if you're nearsighted, it'll help your vision quite a bit. So, like me, if I go out in the woods and I lose my glasses, I'm going to be in tough shape because I can't see very well at all. Couldn't tell a snake from a stick. If I could make me some duct tape glasses by just, again, putting the two strips together, sticky side together, make a little lens, put whatever you have, put some little pinholes in it, you know, test a few of the sizes of the pinholes, see which ones work for you, and you can see probably about, I could see probably as 20, whereas I'm probably 20/200 without my glasses, I could probably see 20/40, 20/60, which is pretty doggone good and can get you out of messes. Now, you're not going to have that field of vision you would have with glasses, but one of the ways you can slightly compensate for that is to put a lot of holes in there. When you get the lens, you know, made and everything, you can then take another strip of duct tape, double it up on the sticky side, and put it around you, kind of like a strap on the back of your head.
Wow. And you know, doubling it up, as you say, and sticky side to sticky side, one of the things I guess we're talking about here is the fact that duct tape is just so gosh darn durable, right?
Oh, yeah, that's the thing. That's the beauty of duct tape. Everybody knows about it and are just about, and, you know, there are tons of uses for it. So everybody's probably got some around the house. And if you don't have these other medical supplies, if you don't have an extra pair of glasses and you just really need to see, or you want to get that ring off or whatever, or you're probably going to have some duct tape around. And, you know, I would advise having a little in your car or, you know, in your backpack, things like that, because I've heard I've heard from people that work in medical services, you know, ambulances and fire trucks and things like that, and several of them had told me that duct tape is an essential item on there, that it's mandatory to have some duct tape just in case. I mean, you don't, like I said, it's just in case you need something that you can't otherwise readily find.
And another essential item is getting a copy of Duct Tape 911. James, I thank you once again for being on the program with us. Again, people can check out your website, thesurvivaldoctor.com, and find out more information about the book as well. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Dr. James Hubbard. Again, his book is Duct Tape 911. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0258, and you'll find links to both James's website and also to where you can sign up for his newsletter, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo-Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Each year in America, there are more new cases of skin cancer than cancers of the breast, prostate, lung, and colon combined. Despite this, the last time a new sunscreen ingredient was allowed to come to market in the U.S. was last century. It's not because there aren't new ingredients, though. Canadians and Europeans have used many new sunscreen ingredients in recent years. The problem is that those ingredients haven't been approved for use here by the government. Why? Time magazine reports that those ingredients are generally considered safe. One reason is that sunscreens are regulated differently here. The Food and Drug Administration's approval process can take seemingly forever. Let's be fair, I have great respect for the FDA, but I also know that one of the big reasons more sunscreens aren't sold here is America's lawsuit problem. Even if you were willing to sign a waiver so you could buy sunscreens now used safely in Canada and Europe, American courts can't be counted on to honor your wishes, and that's just wrong. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
This is your safe haven from the hard news of the day. The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio for your happy place.
And still to come in the program, we'll talk to relationship coach Frank Kermit, who will try to answer the burning question, why is everyone still single? Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way on a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. But I got one more Stuff File news story to get to before we get to all that fun. Edward Gamson of North Bethesda, Maryland, and his partner wanted to grab a little European vacation before a conference in Portugal. But about 20 minutes after their flight left London, Gamson asked the British Airways flight attendant, why are we headed west to go to Spain? Spain? Replied the crewman. We're going to the West Indies. Gamson said he had told the telephone reservation agent he wanted to go to Granada, Spain, not Grenada, a Caribbean country closer to Maryland than to London. The first-class tickets cost Gamson nearly 400,000 frequent flyer miles, and he thinks he spent more than $34,000 on the vacation that he didn't get to take. As compensation, British Airways offered $376 each and 50,000 miles to him and his partner. Gamson sued. British Airways didn't comment, but it's fighting the case. It even tried to remove it from state to federal court to take advantage of a treaty on airline liability. The world's favorite legal maneuver. You say Grenada, and I say Granada, Grenada, Granada, potato, patata. Let's call the whole thing. Oh, let's stop. Let's stop. Anyway, let's just get to our next guest on the program, and I'll stop singing right about now, okay? Relationship coach Frank Kermit is back on the show. He is going to be one of the official panelists for the Great Love Debate 2014 International Tour, which is coming to Montreal August the 4th. We'll talk about that event in a moment, but one of the topics discussed will be, why is everyone still single? Frank joins us once again on the line via Skype to Skype communications. Hi, Frank.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us once again. And I got to start right off the bat. Since I am someone who is single, I will ask the other side of the question. Why is everyone concerned about pairing everyone up?
That's a fantastic question. Let's look at some of the reasons why people would want you to be paired up. Most people associate being in a relationship with being happy. Being in a relationship equals some kind of fulfillment. And if that's something that a person wants, then it's a correct assumption. If you want to be in a relationship, if you want to share your life with someone, you want to build your future with someone, you want to create and raise a family with someone, well, being in a relationship will fulfill those needs, those goals. However, not everybody wants that. There are a segment of people, a category of people, who are happy being single. And I think a lot of them get a lot of flack for being single. And one of the things that I teach is, if someone knows themselves enough that they're staying out of relationships and they're choosing to be single, they're not complaining about it, they're actually happy about it, that's the best choice for them, and we need to respect that choice.
Yeah, you might have to go on the mountaintop and scream that one a little more for that to sink into for some people.
Well, it starts off also that people assume that what they want and what makes them happy is what everybody should want, what should make everybody else happy, and that's simply not true. What works for one person would not work for somebody else. Some people are really, really destined to be great parents because they want to be parents and they want to take on the role. They want to take on the responsibility. Then there are a number of individuals who really should not become parents, and they should not be forced to become parents. They should not be shunned or shamed for choosing not to become parents. It's okay to be child-free if that's what you want.
Okay, so for those who do want to be part of a couple, let's go back to the original question. Mm-hmm. If somebody is looking to be a part of a couple in a relationship, ask the question from the side I asked the first time, why is everyone still single? Why are people who want to be in relationships still single?
Okay, I have identified four categories of people who say that they want to be in a relationship, but there's something holding them back. Now, the first category of people are people who think too highly of themselves. They just overestimate their contribution to a potential relationship. That makes them way too picky. They're saying, why should I have to settle? I'm going to hold out for something better. I deserve a lot more because of everything I offer and everything I bring to a relationship. Well, they might be overestimating their value because they might not be bringing to a relationship what the type of person they want would want from them.
Yeah, but the person you were just describing who says they're looking for the, you know, Mr. or Miss Right and someone who lives up to their standards, are they in the dating game at all, or are they on the sidelines waiting for the perfect person to come by?
That's a separate category.
Ah, okay.
That's a separate category. You have the person who thinks that they are too good to just settle with anybody and to date anybody.
Okay.
So are they really in the dating game? They like to think they are. But if you're not dating, you aren't in the game.
Gotcha.
Okay? And the whole point of dating, don't look at dating as the next person I date is going to be the person I should be in a relationship with. You go out on a date to find out whether or not the things you think you want are actually the things you want. Because once you actually are dating someone, you find out that those things where you said, I would never date somebody of this who has this habit or this situation, it really might not matter to you if they have a lot of other qualities that really are more important to you. You'll only know that once you have some experience.
Okay, so you said there are four different types. What are the
four
other
categories?
Three?
So the first one is the person who thinks too highly of themselves. The second category, people who underestimate what they offer. People who have really low self-esteem that end up pushing people away, who end up turning people off without intending to. These are the ones who figure, I really don't like myself. I don't have anything to offer. Why would anybody like me? And when somebody is actually interested and says, hey, let's go out for a cup of coffee. Let's go out on a night on the town. They find every excuse to avoid being in that situation.
Okay.
They're just worried about getting their hearts broken later on, about being left later on. So why even bother trying? That person really wouldn't like me. And they'll behave in a way that makes the person say, oh, I feel rejected. Oh, this person's not interested back. Okay, I'm gone.
Okay, so you've described the my glass is half empty, half full guy, and my glass is half empty guy. What are exactly. The other two?
Okay, the next one is what you were talking about before, having high standards about the other person. The idea that I want this unrealistic relationship, it has to be perfect, and anything under perfection is just not good enough. These are people who simply do not have a realistic view of what a relationship is. Relationships are good and bad. Even a successful relationship that'll last, let's say, 20 or 30 years, you have to understand that within, let's say, the scope of a 20-year marriage, there might be a couple of years in there that weren't so good. And that's the reality of a relationship. You know how they make that joke, I've been married for 30 years, you know, 10 of them happily.
Right.
Well, there's some truth to that. Some of those long-term relationships, there are going to be those bad points. There are going to be those times where you're with somebody, and yes, there is love, but it's buried underneath some resentment. Something's gone on, a trauma in the family, a crisis that happened that everybody has to get over. And you sometimes are going to be with the right person and say, this doesn't feel right. That's normal. Okay. But if you have this unrealistic expectation that, as you were saying before, this person is going to come into my life and save me and make everything perfect, oh boy, are you in for a reality check. And it's going to smack you hard.
And what's the fourth category?
Now, these are people who have no concept of boundaries. Now, these people tend to be involved with others, but they have no concept of boundaries. They're people pleasers. They're always trying to accommodate. The problem is that they never can get to the point where they say, look, this is what I need. This is what I want. Now, either step up or leave. They don't have the ability to have those boundaries, so they always end up dating the wrong people. If that person wants a commitment, wants to be in a serious relationship, don't date the person who's emotionally unavailable.
Right.
You know, if that person says, I want to be, you know, let's say the person's goal is marriage. I want to be married and have a family of my own. Dating someone who's already married and starting an affair with you probably is not the best decision you could make. So you need a boundary there. Don't get involved with people who are emotionally unavailable, like someone having an affair. But if you don't follow your own rules, you will never be able to achieve what it is you want.
Understood. Now, I mentioned at the top that you're one of the official panelists at the Great Love Debate 2014 International Tour, which is coming to Montreal August the 4th. So what exactly is this event? I know, as I mentioned in the introduction, this is one of the topics discussed. But what is this all about?
Okay, this was created by Brian Howie. He's an author as well as has been advising people about relationships. And he's doing this international tour, going to various cities in the United States and Canada. It's coming to Montreal August 4th. If you visit my website, franktalks.com, and look under the events tab, there's all kinds of information there. If you use the promo code FRANK, you get $10 off this ticket. And what it's about, you get in every city local experts to talk about and discuss the topic, why are so many people single? In a time when there are more ways than ever to meet somebody new, to really connect with someone, whether it's through organized matchmaking companies, whether it's through dating services, online dating, going through friends, going through families, going through social circles. There's all kinds of ways to meet people. Why do we have even more people still single right now and searching? And this is one of the things we're going to be discussing. I'm going to be presenting some of my findings based on my work, and that is there are two major components as to why the majority of people who are single right now are going to continue to remain single.
And they are? We've just got about a minute. So.
Okay, a minute here. Number one, people have way too much choice. They have tons and tons of choice. They can date whoever they want, however long way they want, in any way they want. They can choose to have families. They can choose to remain child-free. They can choose to be in serious relationships or multiple casual relationships. They have so much choice. That's the first component. The second component is they don't have the skills to manage that choice.
Mm. It's interesting you say that because we live in Western society, but the reality is 50% of the planet still has arranged marriages.
Mm-hmm. And would you be surprised to find out that the divorce rate for an arranged marriage is still about the same as marriages where people choose their own partners?
Oh, so mom and dad aren't as helpful as your own decisions.
No. I mean, sometimes the whole point of arranged marriages is they try to find someone that has a proper combination of something that you like in terms of attraction, who would be appealing to you, as well as components to make that person compatible with you, trying to mix the chemistry and the compatibility. And when someone has a lot of choice but doesn't know what to do with that choice, more often than not, they're going to choose the wrong person. And sometimes they're just, they themselves are the wrong person. They want a certain type of relationship. They want a relationship that is loving, that is caring, that is supportive. Well, if you're not a loving, caring, and supportive person, where do you think you're going to find a match?
One of the things that will be discussed at the Great Love Debate 2014 International Tour. Again, people, as you say, can find out more information on your website at franktalks.com, correct?
That's correct. You go to franktalks.com, look in the menu, the events tab. All the information you need is there.
Thank you very much, Frank.
Peter, it's been a pleasure. I look forward to doing the Stuff File again.
Relationship coach Frank Kermit. You can check out his website at franktalks.com and find out more about his upcoming events, including that one at the Great Love Debate 2014 International Tour. And you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0258, and you'll find the link to Frank's site. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A Colorado man made it very easy for law enforcement officials to earn their paychecks after allegedly robbing a bank while wearing a shirt with his name on it. According to police, John David Martinez went into the Wells Fargo branch in Denver wearing a personalized polo shirt bearing his name. The suspect approached a teller and said, "This is a robbery, give me the money." To make it even easier for police, the suspect also allegedly drove his own Honda to the bank, so investigators were able to use the license plate to track down Martinez. Officers showed his DMV photo to a bank employee. "That's him. He's the one who robbed the bank this morning," the employee said. After an investigation that took all of 5 hours, Martinez was arrested. While he was in custody, Martinez reportedly said that he told his wife that he had borrowed the money and did not tell her that he had actually robbed the bank. The 68-year-old, yes, he's 68, was booked into jail in Denver on investigation of felony robbery involving $20,000 or more. And, you know, you usually get more common sense as you get older, but as I said, he's 68. So now you have to ask the question, why would someone rob a bank while wearing a shirt that had their full name on it? Well, one reason, and one reason only, he's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0258. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0258. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded in iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Let me leave you with these words of wisdom. Never, ever juggle ice picks while standing on your waterbed.